O God, in this time, speak to us an Advent word, a word of newness that will change us. In your name, amen. The story of King Josiah is perhaps not one that we know terribly well. Josiah is one of the last kings of Israel, or of the southern kingdom of Israel called Judah. You'll recall that the first king was Saul, and then the second king was David, and the third king was Solomon. And in many ways, particularly David and Solomon, represent a high point of what it was to be a king in Israel. David was passionate. He was a man after God's own heart. For all his faults, ultimately in the depths of his being, he wanted to love God. Solomon is slightly more complicated. In some ways, he's the most successful king, but he never quite achieves the level or the devotion that David has. And he does something else. He introduces into the life of Israel the worship of other gods as a king. And this fault line in the DNA of Israel, this attraction for other gods, is something that will persist as the kings go on. Ultimately, Solomon will be warned that he is endangering the kingdom, and ultimately through his son Rehoboam, the kingdom is split into the southern kingdom, which is Judah, with Jerusalem as the capital, and the northern kingdom of Israel, with Samaria as the capital. And Samaria in particular is profoundly weakened by its love of other gods. And the historians of Israel find no accident that it is Israel, the northern kingdom, the larger of the kingdoms, but the one less devoted, which is taken over first by Assyria, the empire. And it finds significance in the fact that Judah, which has maintained more faithfulness, is the one that is protected when Assyria comes marching across the Middle East. But what of these, pardon me, these other gods? What's the big deal? To worship other gods, for example, the god of fertility. And the god of fertility was very important for these ancient farmers who needed their crops to grow. The god of fertility was about sacrificing that in dubious morality in order to try and placate a fickle god who may or may not be able to look after your crops. But what about the gods of power, of destruction? Those gods were about destroying community and elevating one over others in order to subjugate them. Well, here's an interesting one, the god of destruction. So many of these ancient gods, like the Hindu god Shiva, are about destruction, about this, the sheer joy of destroying things. And Israel worshipped those other gods because it feared that somehow in its god, Yahweh, it had been lumped with a lesser god and began to believe that the gods of the nations might have won over them, whether it was the gods of Egypt, or the gods of Assyria, or the gods of Babylon. And I want us just to think about our seduction for other gods. Now you might say, well, we're Christians, we don't have other gods. The truth is, we all do have gods lurking in our households. Peter Moore, who was a Church of Scotland missionary in Nagpur in the middle of India, tells the story of a missionary friend of his who one day was on a car journey in one of the rickety roads of India, up and down these bumps and mud tracks, when his front tyre blew out with a puncture. So what the missionary did was he took the jack out of the back of the car, began to hoist up the axle, and the axle wasn't big enough, the jack wasn't big enough to get the car up. So what he did was he found a rock, a very well-positioned rock at the side of the road, and he also stuck that under the jack as a way of holding the axle up, and he began to change the tire on the car, change the wheel on the car. Halfway through this exercise, suddenly an Indian man emerged from a nearby home and began screaming and ranting at this missionary. What was he doing? And in amongst the babble, he couldn't work out what this man was saying and why he was so upset at him changing his wheel in his car at the side of a road. But eventually he managed to work out that what had happened was that when he had taken this rock from the side of the road, this was actually this man's God. And he had taken this man's God and was using him to jack up the tire of his car. And no wonder this man was so upset. But eventually he calmed down and he said, well, actually, you can have it, because that God is doing more good for you right now than all it's done for me in the last 30 years. And we laugh. But I want us to think of our seduction to other gods, particularly in this first Sunday in Advent, which is a story of subtraction, of beginning to sense that we become more when we get rid of things from our life that are no longer helpful. So the God of fertility is perhaps the God of wanting to be successful, particularly in a career, and wanting to sacrifice everything for that. The God of destruction speaks to our desire not to build others up, but sometimes to destroy them. Everything will be okay when we get rid of them. The gods of pleasure, we laugh. But I notice that every time I drive past Aldi's in Perth, at the roundabout at Inverallend, I begin to think about how great my life would be if I could eat some of that chocolate. And although I laugh about that, there are these little miniature seductions that we all have in our lives that have too much control over us. Or the desire to just check the internet to see what we might find there. There are all these little seductions, these small gods. And what Advent tells us is, these gods do us as much good as that rock at the side of the Indian road had done for that man for 30 years. And King Josiah, who is the hero of our story today, late in the life of Israel, realizes this, that his ancestors, the kings, have gone wrong in going after other gods. So he clears the gods away from Israel and says, we are going to worship Yahweh, Jehovah, the one true God. And he reminds us again that the greatest commandment is love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and all your mind and all your strength. So I ask us this Advent, how much are you worshipping other gods? And do you need to recover your first love, who is Yahweh? Somebody once said, O God, I do not love you. O God, I do not want to love you. But God, I do want to love you. And I think that often speaks to me, that I do not love God with my heart and soul, but deep in my soul there is a want to love you. And this Advent, this too is from God, and build on that. The second thing that I think the story of Josiah tells us is something about investing in the power of memory. There's a lot said to us about psychologically how the memories that we carry with us can either scar us or can give us a sense of goodness and trust. It's the same with a nation. For me, one of the greatest television series ever produced is The West Wing, which, I don't know if you've watched it, but chronicles for 7 seasons the story of another man called Josiah Bartlett, who's the president of the United States. Josiah Bartlett is kind of an amalgam of the best bits of Bill Clinton, and without the worst bits, because Josiah Bartlett is very faithful to his wife. It is also about the best bits, the optimism of John F. Kennedy, and something about the moral goodness of Abraham Lincoln. And this is all rolled into this character called Josiah Bartlett, and the name actually Josiah Bartlett is partly resident of Josiah Bartlett, the original Josiah Bartlett, who framed the original US Constitution, and also King Josiah. And what's interesting is that the story of The West Wing has done very, very well, but at the moment there is a podcast going through each episode week by week. And what happens is, if there's an episode, for example, about military intervention, they might get a general or an admiral on to talk about military intervention, and they might talk to some of the actors or the director who was involved in the making of that particular episode. What's been particularly interesting is that so often they are discovering that the stories that they are remembering from The West Wing have unusual resonances with what is happening in the White House at the moment. So there might be an episode where the press secretary in the fictional world of The West Wing, C.J. Craig, accidentally tells a lie to the press and is so upset with the fact that she might have misled the press that she spends the whole episode trying to recover the damage. And then they compare that to what may or may not be happening in the White House at the moment, where there's more than the occasional untruth which may or may not be uttered by the press secretary. Or one episode where they were really struck, where it was about the US Supreme Court, and it happened on the same day that Brett Kavanaugh was testifying before Senate or before Congress for his nomination to the US Supreme Court. And another episode, which was about anthrax being sent into the White House, was being recorded the same day that letter bombs were being sent to Democratic politicians. And all the time, people are spotting resonances between a story, which is in their collective memory, and their experience now. And this is what Josiah does. In the story of Passover, and he invests heavily in this, he gets 3,000 lambs all together. In fact, I think at one point it's 30,000 lambs. Now, those of you who own sheep, I don't know if you'd ever fancy investing in 30,000 lambs. There's quite a few sheep owners at this moment shaking their heads. They don't fancy it. But what Josiah does is he takes 30,000 lambs and he gives them to the people of Israel and he says, "We are going to remember Passover. We are going to remember the night which for him happened 700 years before, where our God, Yahweh, defeated all the gods of Egypt and took a slave people out of Egypt and made them a nation." He wants them to remember that they think God is only interested in power, but remind them that when they were slaves, God liberated them. They want to think that the gods are fickle and the gods have to be bought off. And he wants to remind them that when they were nothing and could do nothing, God, out of loyalty to them, made them a new nation. He wants them to remember that when they think the darkness is going to overwhelm them and that life is always going to be bent towards destruction, the God who made the universe took them into life. He wants to remind them that they think that the gods are only about sacrifice and placating, and to remind them that God has given them life. And the Passover becomes an act of gratitude for God who makes them live. And Josiah invests in this memory so that people can move towards a better future. The story of Josiah is actually one where, after Passover, in Chronicles at least, what happens, sorry, my scarf is falling off here. In Chronicles at least, what happens is that he makes a disastrous political decision, goes to war with Egypt, and although the Egyptian pharaoh actually prophesies to him not to do this, he disguises himself, but gets shot by an arrow and dies at the age of 39. It's a massive lost opportunity. One of Israel's best kings is killed in his prime. And you might think this is an utter disaster. And it is, because in one generation's time, Babylon's armies will conquer Judah. But Josiah has given them a memory. He has given them Passover. It had not been celebrated for 400 years up to the kingdom of Josiah. But he began to say, let us remember Passover, how God rescues us. And so what happens is, as the people of Israel are taken into captivity and all is lost, they take with them a memory, the memory of Passover. And in exile, they celebrate Passover. And when the people are returned to the land 70 years later, they keep celebrating Passover. And all through the hundreds of years after that, through the conquest of the Greeks and then of the Romans, people keep celebrating Passover. All because King Josiah gave them a memory. And for me, in the Church of Scotland, and for us in the Church of Scotland, in a period of at least numerical decline, we have with us a memory. A memory of how God has spoken to this nation in the past. Of how the people of this nation have found in themselves that the God of Jesus Christ was the God who transformed them and motivated them, who held together the bonds of their communities, who saw to it that justice happened. Although we often lament the days of the three-legged stool in church and of church discipline ruling communities, in the days when the church was responsible for community discipline, and don't get me wrong, I don't want to go back to these days, so we're not going to have a three-legged stool in church anymore, but rates of criminal reoffending were almost negligible. When people did things wrong and the church got involved, they hardly ever did it wrong again. And we would die for those rates of reoffending in our justice system today. What I'm saying is that there's a collective memory in the people of Scotland of being a people after God's own heart, and we have forgotten that. And the youngest generations today know nothing, so little, of the Christian story. That's why what is going on in that room there at the moment with Mary and some of these young people is just so, so important. But God can do it again. God can revive us as a nation and bring us back to him. We might not be the ones who get to see it, but like Josiah, we can pass on the story, pass on the memory, until the nation is revived. The final thing I want to say is to remind us that Josiah begins the practice of Passover, and then another Jewish king, King Jesus, takes Passover and modulates it into communion, Eucharist, bread and wine. But he takes one important difference. Instead of the king providing 30,000 lambs for the people to celebrate Passover, the king becomes the lamb. Jesus himself becomes the Passover sacrifice. He gives up everything for his people so that they are no longer slaves but set free. Set free from sin, set free from dark powers, set free from the love of other gods. And every single one of you here this morning has had a king who became the lamb to rescue you. To rescue you from sin, to rescue you from darkness, to rescue you from the love of other gods. Is that not just amazing that we are worth that, each and every one of us? So let us live and leave here today as the ones who know that the King became the Lamb to rescue us, and He will not let us go.